and happy Saturday, faithful Sam Nation listeners, friends, and the like. I'm so happy to be here, and grateful to be back on the Sam Nation Radio Network. What a week it's been! Well, we survived Women's Day. That did happen. Correct. It always is so predictable on these days that you're going to get all the social media blast. If you're not on social media, you're spared. Every time there's a Women's Day or any other kind of, you know, celebrate a pet project of the left day. I'm not saying it's a pet project, but, you know, they're meaningless. This is meaningless symbolism. If you're a respectful human, you celebrate women every day. And I say that as a husband and the father of two girls. And the question I have, too, about Women's Day, isn't that a little disrespectful? Facebook says there's 51 genders. So why celebrate just one? I mean, we've got enough days on the calendar. We might as well throw the remaining 50 in. Producer Robbie tweeted out on Thursday that it's still unconscionable that in 2018, women only spend 77 cents of every dollar a man makes. So that's just to give you a sense of who I'm dealing with here in the studio. Now, you know what's not meaningless symbolism? I'll tell you. Maximum pressure policy. These three delicious little words are going to take the news cycle by storm. It's already started a little bit, and we're going to see it in the continued in the weeks to come, because it was announced Thursday evening on Women's Day that Kim Jong-un, a.k.a. Mop Top, the dictator of North Korea, the feared nuke monger, an all-around bad boy, Dennis Rodman aficionado as well, need to throw that in. The man loves his hoops. He also likes to mortar blast his enemies, preferably if they are his close relatives. Now, he has invited none other than President Trump to meet with him on the North Korea-South Korea border in the so-called Peace House. This is the portion of the DMZ where the North and South come together to meet. As you know, the Korean War ended in armistice, which means technically hostilities still continue. The war has never officially ended, but they do have this one meeting spot. You've seen the pictures. You know what we're talking about here. It's not an ornate or fancy building at all. And it covers the border. One side is North Korean side, one side is South Korean side. But in the middle, there's this neutral territory. And this, by, you know why they're, why he's inviting him there, right? And not to Pyongyang. Do I have to say the obvious? There's no way in hell a U.S. president would travel to Pyongyang. No American should. And Trump's looking, you know, it's like, look what happened to Otto Warmbier. And the North Koreans would never allow it, because the amount of military infrastructure that travels with the president, that would essentially be an invasion of North Korea. And Mop Top isn't going to travel to, he's not going to really leave the country. That guy, if there's anyone who fears a decapitation strike, this guy, if he left the country, okay, he's like, almost guaranteed there'd be a coup. So this is the stalemate, but it's absolutely historic. And it comes after a series of days preceding this press conference that we heard on Thursday. It comes on the heels of a number of very flattering articles that I noticed in the press from publications such as Time and other liberal rags that began to wax, I would say, complimentary of Trump. The piece in Time, the title of it read, "Donald Trump deserves credit for North Korea summit. It's the world's most famous interrogation technique, immortalized by countless TV detective shows and backed up by the CIA," the Time piece reads. "And now the good cop, bad cop routine has begun to pry open the inscrutable hermit kingdom." This is the reference to North Korea. And it says about how on Tuesday, North Korea and South Korea agree to sit down next month for historic talks. May include the subject of denuclearization of the divided peninsula. But the point of the piece is that, hey, you know, maybe, and this was on Wednesday, by the way, this piece came out a day before the announcement was made that Kim Jong-un invited none other than Trump to meet with him. This piece here and others like it actually give credit to Trump. Now, this is almost more unprecedented than Kim Jong-un inviting Trump to meet with him. And this is well, look, what's the conventional wisdom? What do we know? You tune in, you listen to the program, you know what the conventional wisdom is. The press, the left, Democrats, and many rhino Republicans, they all think that Trump's an idiot. He's a rube. He's a goober. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's out there bumbling his way through, and he didn't even want to become president, right? He did this for kicks, and then, whoops, I won. Meanwhile, scheming with the Russians, all that good stuff. Anyway, but Trump's an idiot, and he's certainly not anyone who's going to act seriously on the world stage. And exactly to this point, you'll recall that, you know, mere weeks ago, if you tuned into any one of the cable talk shows or news shows, especially on CNN, MSNBC, and the like, you would have heard about North Korea admonishments from these talking heads, these leftists, that were saying, well, you know, Trump, this bellicose rhetoric isn't helping. These blistering remarks and flame-throwing comments, this is amateur hour. This is not how you conduct policy or diplomacy. All right, so now, fast forward some months, and we actually have Time Magazine praising Trump for getting us to this point. And I'm having a, well, but of course moment. It is a Sam Nation duh. Because the only way that you compel a madman dictator, and I actually think that's an unfair characterization, because I think that North Korea, and as I've explained before, I think North Korea is very strategic in their pursuit of nuclear weapons. They are looking at countries like Libya and Iraq, but Libya specifically, a country that agreed to the U.S. demands to denuclearize and get rid of its chemical and other weapons of mass destruction. And the result was, two administrations later, Hillary Clinton decides, we're going in. And Obama says, let's do it. And next thing you know, Gaddafi's being dragged through a sewer with a bullet in his head. And that's a problem. Mop Top is a rational actor. I've said this many times before. So he sees that his only path to guarantee that his country isn't going to be swept up in the, you know, next administration's, you know, folly is to have the means to destroy us. Mutual assured destruction. So with this said, what does this meeting mean? What does this invite mean? And is it good news? Answer is, I don't know. I do know, and I'll tell you, I think there. When it comes to North Korea, I'm a hawk, and I don't see that anything that North Korea is doing here, I don't see that North Korea is suddenly going to change its ways. I think they're buying time. But I also think that one thing that this tells us almost certainly is that Trump's blustering, bellicose remarks and digs at the tubby dictator, Kim Jong-un, were probably backed up by some serious military maneuvers that were out of our sight. Because I don't think that they would be wanting to buy time. Again, if you assume that this is insincere, and I do, I really do, I don't trust these people one bit. So if it is really just a chess move, it's a stalling move. And it tells me that we were ready to go in. that we have surrounded North Korea in a way militarily that has them freaked out. It also tells me, I suspect, that a lot of what I've been mentioning here on the program about North Korea not having enough food, not having enough supplies, the military being demoralized, I think that North Korea is, at this stage, without a completed, ready-to-go nuclear warhead, extremely vulnerable. So this is a blank. And the move, by the way, the move is to set a meeting with Kim Jong-un and invade the country 24 hours before that meeting takes place. That, in my opinion, is the move for Trump to make. Now, I hope they're not listening. We do not translate this program into Korean. But maybe they're monitoring us. I don't know. It could be. But that's the play. Because this is a blank. This is a buy time maneuver. And notice when the invite was made for sometime by May. Well, May, okay, it's not that, it's close, but it's not, hey, come visit us in 30 days. It's still kind of out there. It gets pushed back to June, you know, nobody's going to be too suspicious of it. So here are the actual remarks. I want you to hear this because this is where the term maximum pressure policy came. The South Korean National Security Advisor, his name is Chung Oi-young, and he came out of the White House after a long meeting with Trump and General McMaster, Trump's National Security Advisor. And this is what he said.
I'd like to thank President Trump, the Vice President, and his wonderful national security team, including my close friend, General McMaster. I explained to President Trump that his leadership and his maximum pressure policy, together with international solidarity, brought us to this juncture. I expressed President Moon Jae-in's personal gratitude for President Trump's leadership.
In any negotiation, okay, in any negotiation, if you put forward a show of strength and the other side pipes up that they want to talk, you've won the first battle. This is true if you're an attorney. This is true if you're any kind of a negotiator. And it certainly is true in the world of diplomacy and geopolitical conflict that we have here. I think there's several components to the story. And next week when we talk again, there will be more to go off of. The first component is the actual strategy of what this is about. I think North Korea is buying time. I think it shows a certain amount of a blank on their part. But the other part of the story is the credit that Trump does deserve and that the media is so reluctant to give him. Oh, my goodness, these poor tortured souls. This just does not fit the narrative. And this is, by the way, I say this because virtually all analysis about Trump in the mainstream media is pre-formatted, okay, preconceived. And all these pundits do is look for things to fit their narrative that they've already constructed. This is kind of like when you write an obituary. You know, they pre-write media journalists pre-write obituaries for famous people who are advanced in age, so they have them ready to go. And then, you know, it's like they suddenly die, and you find out something totally new about them, and now you got to go fix the whole thing. That's the best example. But anyway, what you have here is they've already written Trump's obituary. They've already written it. He's a dummy. He's going to bury us. He's going to start World War III. And all of a sudden, you got Kim Jong-un going, hey, wait a minute. Let's talk. And I'm going to come myself. I'm going to drive down, about fly or probably takes one of those. He probably has an armored train. I mean, he's like Kim Jong-un is like a Bond villain. in many ways. So I picture him in an armored train. But anyway. He's going to leave Pyongyang and travel the considerable distance to meet the Trumpster. What do I think that meeting's like? It's a size up, of course. Okay, I'll get into that. I'll tell you what I think about the meeting. All right, don't go anywhere. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, here on Sam Nation Radio. Back after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, okay. When it comes to this meeting between Mop Top, Kim Jong-un, North Korea's dictator, and our own, Donaldus Maximus, I have to say, one thing I suspect there's quite a bit of a height differential. This is going to be colossally embarrassing. And by the way, I have a prediction for you. I have a prediction that this meeting will not be advertised in North Korea in any way, shape, or form. And imagine this, right? I mean, you look, I in front of me here, I've got my iPhone 10, and I've this iPhone 10, right? I can pull up. I got Twitter on there. I got Facebook. I got every website I possibly get at the tip of my fingers. This is the world in North Korea. You and I can't even fathom it. There's one state agency that reports the news, and it is only what Kim Jong-un wants you to know. So I predict that this meeting is not going to be advertised in any way, shape, or form. And if it is, they're going to have to do some editing because they cannot, absolutely will not show a side-by-side picture. They might not even agree to do a side-by-side picture, actually. Well, Trump gets a lot of flack for his weight. This is for Trump. This is a phenomenal photo op. Kim Jong-un's going to make him look good. All right. So what will it be like in that meeting? First of all, you know, they're going to speak through translators. And those conversations, I will say this, are always a little bit more formal and stilted, because you're have you ever done this, spoken through a translator? It's interesting because you have to wait. You say what you're saying, and the translator, there's a certain delay, and so you're not getting as good of a read of the person that you're talking to, because you're not able to pick up their cues in real time. I think one of Trump's some of you will laugh. I think one of Trump's great strengths is he's a people reader. I mean, he understands people. He understands what people react to, and he's very good at communication. But in order to be good at communicating outward, you've also got to be able to pick up other people's cues. So there's a degree. He has a degree of emotional intelligence that he doesn't get credit for. And that will be the number one obstacle here. I think that the meeting is about buying time, and I think it would be absolutely delicious if we invaded the country 24 hours before the meeting. It would be the ultimate jiu-jitsu move, would it not? I promise you that General Mattis is going to think about it. That it's going to the thought is going to be spoken inside of the White House. It's an interesting thing. I don't think there is no way that North Korea gives up its nuclear weapons program. There is absolutely no way. It is their guarantee to survival. They are so. And again, part of the story here is how desperately, woefully underfunded, underfed their military is. North Korea is not like China. I mean, China has maybe the largest standing army in the world by a factor of a significant proportion. I mean, they've got an enormous military, well-funded, and with a tremendous amount of technology behind it, building ships and tanks and everything, by the dozen on a monthly basis. But anyway, that's an example of a military that has manpower and strength behind it. North Korea doesn't have that. They need to have a button on a nuke, on a missile that takes, 8, 10, 12, 100 people to operate and that can do the work of an entire massive military complex that they don't have. So they will not be giving anything up. Do not, if you're a peacenik and you think, oh, okay, I hate Trump, but this is good. This is good. They're going to, the North Koreans are going to come to the table. This is nice. Ah, kumbaya. No. But it is an opportunity for us to size them up a little bit. Trump's going to be Trump. This is good. Of all the presidents to send to meet with the North Korean dictator, Trump's the man. All right, don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, back after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very interesting. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
So against the backdrop of success in North Korea, we also have Trump Russia not dying. Sam Rojofsky here, Sam Nation Radio. There was a mysterious meeting that has been in the news this week. This meeting happened a long time ago. I want to say, what was it, January 2017? So before Trump took office. And this meeting took place in the Seychelles. These are beautiful, beautiful islands located off the coast of Africa in the Indian Ocean. There's some very bougie resorts there. So if you've got money to burn and want to spend 25 hours on an airplane, go there. It's beautiful. Now, what happened is a guy, Eric Prince, he operates a company called Blackwater. They're the mercenary private security company that got its start after the Iraq War. And he met with some guy from the Emirates and also with a Russian guy, a close confidant of Vladimir Putin. Mueller is investigating this meeting, and he's investigating it. You know why? Because Eric Prince testified at some point that this meeting wasn't planned. That it just sort of happened. That they all stumbled upon each other there in a nice hotel. And why, hello, nice to meet you. And what are you doing here? What a coincidence. But it was really planned. And it was an effort to set up a back channel to Putin. And predictably, the left has run with this and been talking about it. Listen, this is so tiresome and stupid, there are no words for it. It does demonstrate again the extreme danger of having a special prosecutor active and on your tail. Because if anybody lied about anything in this meeting to an FBI agent or any federal agent, they're in trouble. And apparently, maybe somebody involved here may have lied under oath to the grand jury, and that's a problem. But as far as an incoming president trying to set up a back channel with an important country in the world, this is asinine. Do you understand how stupid this is? This is what presidential transition teams do. They talk to world leaders. They find ways to communicate with them. By the way, back channels. Everybody's had back channels. What the hell do you think? How do you think Nixon got his way into China. You think he just knocked on the door and said, good morning, I'd like to come in and visit. Back channel. How do you think that this thing happened with North Korea? Back channels. You guys in the media, Adam Schiff, this is so maddeningly idiotic. Objectively speaking, you can't have it both ways. You can't call Trump a disastrous, you know, diplomat who's undiplomatic and think that he's going to fail at every juncture on the world stage, and then criticize him for conducting quiet diplomacy, for sending low-level people from within his campaign, people that are close advisors to him, to meet with close advisors of Putin. The election was over. There's no collusion. January 2017. The election happened in November. This whole thing has just gone. It's gone nuts. But it sounds exotic, right? They met in these islands in the Seychelles, and it was far away. And there was this Blackwater guy, and there was this Middle Eastern prince, and then there was a Putin crony. I mean, it's so sensational. So this, but I'm telling you nothing to this. Absolutely nothing, nada, zilch, total nothing. Yes, we're going to get to immigration, other stuff too. Yeah, and tariffs. I'm going to talk about it today, finally. So don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation. Okay. Also in the news this week, very interesting discovery in the Pacific on an island some 1,400 miles away from Hawaii. The bones that were discovered there and thought to be that of a man are now almost 99% certain to belong to Amelia Earhart. So this is interesting. And do you know how they figured it out? I guess they're doing some DNA testing, but they also have found a number of artifacts there that corroborated it being her. She had a male navigator. We're not allowed to talk about this, but she had a Tsenge Norge guy with her, and his name was Fred. What was it? Was it Fred Noonan? Oh, I forget his name. Fred Noonan. That's the guy. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they found a tool that he had carried, a navigation tool that his friends knew that he had with him on the trip. And they also found a liquor bottle. Now, this is great stuff. Found a liquor called Benedictine. It's an herbal liqueur, and it was something that Earhart was known to carry. So they're basically piecing this together a little bit like you would a crime scene type thing. But they found only 13 bones. Well, you figure she was lost, what, in 1940? No, earlier. 37. And she was over the Pacific and just disappeared. Anyway, so I don't know. I don't know if they found Hoffa there, too. But no, he's under some Sears and Roebuck parking lot. He's in deep concrete. Yeah, Bill's nodding. Bill probably knows where he is. Bill's a man of many talents. Okay. I think this is fascinating stuff. There were a lot of theories about where she was and where she could be and, you know, still alive somewhere living. Well, not still alive, but had lived out her life somewhere. But apparently she did crash and was a castaway on an island and lived there for some time. So she didn't perish as a result of the accident. Interesting stuff. All right. Yes, we're going to get to immigration. I got it. Well, yes, and tariffs. I want to get to all this. Well, why don't I just... Let me begin to address the tariff issue now, because, well, there are a lot of opponents out there of what Trump is doing. And he announced this week, he laid out his plan. The tariffs are steep. And there are a number of, it's basically applying to everybody right now except for Canada and Mexico. But there's a critical thing that you have to know about these tariffs. All countries that are hit by the tariffs can negotiate for exclusion. So the way I read this, before I get into the philosophy of tariffs and my economic views on them, I just want to make everybody clear that this is classic Trump. You come out with something draconian. You've read the Art of the Deal. This is, you ask, if your objective is to get an arm, you take the whole damn body. And then you negotiate to return everything but the arm. So for everybody out there who has missed, I don't know, if people just miss the mark when they analyze this stuff. It is, yes, because of the negotiation loophole, exclusion loophole in this act, you've got the ability to renegotiate trade terms with each individual country. And who do you think is, you think that China really is in the driver's seat when it comes to this deal? Do you understand how catastrophic this is for China? Who is China's number one export market? We are. There's no question. And there, by the way, this is leverage to renegotiate and put China's feet to the fire on other issues. For example, copyright issues. I mean, China, there are so many ways that China messes with our economy. We don't even realize it. And Trump is right. Fundamentally, he's right when it comes to his understanding of what of the manipulations that are happening by the Chinese and other countries that wage war on us. And it's economic war. I mean, when you have a company, a small business that spends millions developing a product, the Chinese company hacks into their computer, steals a product, manufactures it overseas for pennies on the dollar, and resells it back through Alibaba or Amazon or whatnot, and we have to go chase it down. This is economic war. It puts people out of business. So I get what he's doing, but I'll talk more about tariffs when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. Okay, when it comes to these tariffs, yes, you had Grover Norquist immediately pipe up. He's a conservative, fiscally conservative guy, and certainly a free market guy. Immediately pipe up and say tariffs are a tax. And I agree with him. Tariffs are a tax. But there's something important that is missing in this equation. Taxes, right? In other words, what is essentially a tax? A tax is a cost burden that is put upon an individual or a business by a government. So in that sense, a tariff, yes, falls into that same category. But I'll tell you what else falls in that same category. Regulation. So when you have a manufacturing industry in a country like the United States burdened by enormous regulation, and they are to participate, compete, what have you, at a tax or tariff equality level with a country that has virtually no regulation, it's not fundamentally fair. And the problem that you have is you will have an industry drain in the country that is overly regulated. Now, what I like about Trump is that he's attacking regulations at the same time as he's proposing tariffs. What is disastrous is when liberals play with tariffs, they're also jacking up regulations. It's the worst of both worlds. I think, okay, so it's going to hit, some companies will benefit from the tariffs. Some companies will be hurt by it. But it's political decision. And as I mentioned in the last segment, I think it's a strategic tool to get countries who have been bad actors in trade wars to come to the table and negotiate for an exemption to this tariff by giving up things that are vital to us. The other thing, I think this is very political. Who benefits from this? It's simple. The countries that benefit from this are the ones in the blue wall. You've got Ohio, you've got Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, okay? And what states are going to be hurt by this? Actually, it's fascinating because there was a piece about, do you know that we have steel companies here in California? You won't believe this. We do, but the companies here in California that produce steel, and many of them are right here in the Southland. There's one over, I want to say in El Monte or Downey. I'm probably getting this wrong, or maybe it's the Inland Empire. But at any rate, there's a company out here, but they don't mine the ore. They don't refine. They don't work with the raw product. They don't create a raw product. They import from China bulk slabs of iron and then repurpose them, reshape them, right, and heat them up, melt them down, and put them into whatever form they're then later resold. And these companies are going to be hurt by it. But do you think Trump's crying over California? Hell no. And that, by the way, brings me I've got to get to this immigration piece because Trump is at war with California, and I love it. And if there's any indication, by the way, of how this will go, just look at Kim Jong-un. I mean, pretty soon we're going to have a meeting on the Nevada-California border between Jerry Brown and the Trumpster. I'm telling you, we're I'm waiting for them to cry uncle. I'll explain. Don't go anywhere. Back right after this, Sam Rogowski here on Sam Nation Radio.
Now, as an added spot tonight, I just wanted to let you guys know that we are subjugating our entire show to Sam Nation because apparently he's right and the rest of everyone is wrong.
Sam Nation, here we are on the Sam Nation Radio Network having lots of fun. By the way, this is the place where past performance can't guarantee future results. So if you listen one week and you like it, keep listening. Because we're doing what we're doing, whether you like it or not. Okay. Jerry Brown, California v. Trump, or I would say Trump v. California. This is absolutely fantastic stuff. Friends, if you are like me and live in California and must, for the most part, hold your nose, not just figuratively, but sometimes actually quite literally. For example, when I walk through Pooh Plaza over here at the Orange County Civic Center, the homeless encampment, as basically a giant feces pool. Yeah, that I'm actually literally holding my nose. And then whenever I hear our stupid politicians, whether it's the Governor Brown or if it's Kevin DeLeon, who's, I think, challenging Feinstein. Isn't that the idea? He's going to be running in the primary. Anyway, Kamala Harris. Oh, my God. Eric Garcetti. Don't even get me started. So we are a state of political idiots and fools, and we are the most mismanaged state, maybe one of the most mismanaged states in the country. What are we, still the 7th, 8th largest economy in the world, or whatever we are, 16th? We are doing great in spite of ourselves and our best efforts to totally destroy us. At any rate, the showdown is all about illegal immigration. Trump has gone to court and filed a lawsuit in federal court against California, claiming that California is interfering with its efforts to detain, arrest, and deport illegal immigrants. Now, if we want to ask how that lawsuit is going to go, how it's going to play out. Well, I don't. There's a simple question of federalism here. Trump has the federal government, the president, through his Department of Justice, has plenary powers in the area of immigration. This is not a state issue. So I have mentioned to you before where I've said, you know, that this entire resistance stunt of declaring California a sanctuary state or declaring a city in California a sanctuary city is obstruction. And in theory, although it's never been done, but theoretically, it's entirely possible for the federal government to arrest or to otherwise compel a state officer who is acting in contravention of a federal authority. So I on paper, and at least in legal standing, this lawsuit should proceed in the Trump administration's favor. Now, this will be first heard in a federal trial court in California, and then be heard if up on appeal in the Ninth Circus. So I have no hopes that this lawsuit is going to go anywhere in the trial court or in the Ninth Circuit, but it certainly may be heard by the Supreme Court because it's an important issue. And it's not one ultimately that the state of California is going to win. Now, state of California with sanctuary city policy and sanctuary state policy has always been playing politics, okay? This is all about politics. Resisting Trump sells in California because we've got a bunch of nutty liberals here who make up, unfortunately, too much of the electorate, of the voting public. So this is Governor Jerry Brown talking on Wednesday about, well, there's talking about the sanctuary city thing and Jeff Sessions and his lawsuit. Listen to him. I love this. First, he's saying California's sanctuary laws don't protect criminals. This is a reign of terror. Listen to what he says.
The main point is that these laws do not protect criminals, and they explicitly allow for the handover of these criminals. They're listed, all the very serious crimes. But secondly, you make the point that there's a lot of innocent people out there. And this is the problem. We have millions of people who are here without papers. And some of them have been working for 10, 15, 20 years. They've been serving the economy. A lot of them are doing the dirty work, whether it's washing dishes or picking fruit in the field. And now the attorney general is basically initiating a reign of terror.
Do you remember? By the way, about this sanctuary city state policy protecting only the lawful illegal immigrants. Let me tell you. Do you remember what happened in Oakland? You remember how the Oakland mayor, Libby Schaaf, the mayor's office tipped off the community that a ICE raid was imminent. And they had, I think what it was about 15 or 16 really hardcore, dangerous, criminal, illegal aliens that skedaddled, that scattered to the, you know, four corners of the earth. And haven't, to my knowledge, haven't been recaptured. This is a problem. See, California, the way California left-wing politicians do things, they are perfectly willing to let criminal, illegal aliens, felons, that have no business being in this country, get away so as they can score political points off this stupid, insane resistance movement to Trump. Now, if you needed any further proof that Jerry Brown is delusional, he actually said this following the previous statement I just played. Listen closely.
What Jeff Sessions said is simply not true. And I call upon him to apologize to the people of California to bringing the mendacity of Washington to California and trying to insert discord and division, and I might add dysfunctionality, in a state that's really working. So let's build some bridges, not walls.
How dare you, Jeff Sessions, with your Washington mendacity to say that our state, dysfunction? Hilarious. Hey, this is a state right now that is scratching its heads going, how are we going to call our taxes a charity contribution so we don't lose the last remaining multimillionaires and billionaires that fund our entire budget? This is a state, where do you even start with that? This is a state that can't fund its prisons, so we're releasing dangerous felons out on the street. Property crime soaring through the roof. I mean, we all live here, so you know we don't have to get into the details of it. But this is absolutely nutty. But I actually think he believes this stuff. I think that whether he's senile or a left winger or both, I think Brown actually believes his own nonsense. Now, Kamala Harris, who is kind of teeing herself up to run against Trump, I think she fancies herself as a contender in the 2020 race, said this about Sessions' lawsuit.
I think Jerry Brown is absolutely right. This administration and Jeff Sessions in particular have clearly put a target on the back of California, and California's going to fight. And I think that these folks are really mired in rolling back the clock in time, and that's not going to happen. California represents the future, and they don't like it, but there you go.
California represents the future. Fantastic. Here's, I think, what she means by rolling back the clock in time is that we're going to maybe perhaps shed a few million illegal immigrants for a change. Maybe we're going to get back to following the law, gosh forbid. And maybe, just maybe, California needs to reexamine its insane tax and spend policy. So I agree with her in one respect, and that is that Trump has painted a target on the back of California 100%. Do not think for a minute that the tax bill was not, and I realize I might be jumping around here a little bit, but it's all connected. The tax bill that did away with the SALT deductions, with the state and local tax deductions, was a direct target at California, at New Jersey, at New York, at high tax blue states. Trump has, you know, it's these states. It's so funny to me. California, so Trump wins the election. California can't believe it. I mean, California's talking about seceding from the union. We're done. We have got to cut ourselves off. And they decide they're going in for full resistance. And Trump says, I will see your resistance and raise you one giant screw you after another. And I have a question for you. At what point do these clowns all shut up and start to take notice? Because I'm telling you, when it comes to the SALT deductions, I know people who are leaving. I know people. Now, this is no skin off their nose. Look, what they're doing is they're packing up. And if you saw me here in the studio, you'd see my air quotes. They're packing up, tidying their house up, buying a house in Nevada, moving all of their accounts to Nevada. That, by the way, big loss to our banks here, right? They're taking all of their accounts. They're moving everything over to Nevada, local banks in Nevada. They're getting rid of their California driver's license. They're getting a Nevada driver's license. They're re-registering all of their cars in Nevada. They still are going to spend time in California. They're still going to be my neighbors. I'm still going to see them on the weekend. But they're going to spend more time in Nevada. And guess what? They're not going to be spending. They are not going to be filing California tax returns, or they're going to file California tax returns, but they're going to claim X amount of days out of the state. And you get, at some point, you get credit for that. This is happening. They're going to feel this. There is a reality here. And this lawsuit against this lawsuit that's fighting the California sanctuary state policy is one more example of California being compelled, being checkmated by Trump. Trump's saying, I don't care what you guys do. Screw you. I'm going to do it my way. And it's effective. It's very effective. And I think you can almost hear in Governor Brown's voice the mendacity of Washington in trying to insert discord and division. Discord and division. These people have been calling us Trump supporters dummies, morons, hate mongers, racists. Discord and division. This is what Democrats do. They put all of us in little categories. You're white, you're black, you're this, you're that, you're one of these 51 genders. You're trans, you're bi-trans, you're translucent. I can't even keep up. But the point is, division. This is such a joke, but I'm absolutely loving it. If you are a down in the dumps right now, California conservative, if you voted for Trump but are keeping it on the down low because you can't tell anybody, certainly not at the office. You might be out of a job. Like if you work at a public library, don't tell anyone. No Trump stickers. So if you're like me and you like Trump, you voted for him and you think on balance he's a good president and you think this state is nuts, I am telling you what Trump is doing, everything he can to turn the heat up on us here, on our politicians. And they are hating it, but there's not much they can do about it. Yeah, so like for example, with the tax, I don't think there's any way because the IRS has the ultimate say. So again, it's back to the federal level. And the IRS is under the Treasury Department. So again, Trump administration. And there's no way the IRS is going to say, oh yeah, taxes, yeah, that's a charitable deduction. Yeah, no problem. This is it. We're going to turn the state of California into one giant charity. Well, in my opinion, we've already been there for quite some time. All right, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back right after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam Rogowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Yes, 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 yes. Okay, this is great. This clip here, this is Stuart Varney. I really like him. He's on Fox Business, has a show. And this is from Varney & Co. on Monday, talking about California specifically, because I was just mentioning this. I was just talking about how I know people who are bailing on the state because they're – well, previous – okay, so people were barely hanging on in California. Let me explain this. Let me just make something that should be patently obvious but isn't to a lot of people, explaining this in some detail. As it stood, whatever money you were paying in California – could be deducted from your gross adjusted income on your federal taxes. So in that sense, whatever the percentage was, it wasn't the full percentage. You got a discount on it by virtue of it being a deduction. You do away with that, and it's potentially a 30%, 20% tax increase. That's what the math works out to. The people that can do something about it are not working people. Working people have to grin and bear it unless they go and find a job in another state and just move their family and sell their house and be done with their neighborhood and where they grew up and everything. But the wealthy, those evil rich that the media Democrats love to fight against, they're very portable. That's how I'll put it. They're able to move, okay? They can get up and go. They can buy a new house. They can keep their house in California. They can get up and go and buy a big house in Nevada somewhere. And so here is Stuart Varney explaining this, and he is right on when it comes to this. Listen.
Under the new tax law, local taxes are not fully deductible. So in high-tax states like California and New Jersey, the 1% will be paying a whole lot more. The Democrats take one look at that and they instantly realize they got a problem because the rich can move and take their money with them. It's happened before. In Maryland, the state imposed a millionaire's tax. Many of those millionaires promptly left. Maryland lost money. It's not that Democrats suddenly love the 1%. Oh, no. It's their money they want and need. California gets almost half its income tax revenue from its high-income earners. If even a few of them leave, California takes a huge financial hit.
Yes. 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 This isn't ideology. This isn't theory. This is real. And I'm hoping the net effect of this is that California loses enough of the wealthy that it has to start pinching pennies. You can't be paying a prison guard $250,000 a year. It's just not going to happen. And then a fully funded pension for life with health care and everything. It's a prison guard, for Pete's sake. I'm not putting you down if this is what you do, but I'm telling you, it's not a $200,000 a year job. What are we doing? And then we're saying, well, our prisons are overcrowded and we can't afford it. And we can't. Yeah, I understand. There's drug crimes and everything. It's ridiculous. Do everything backwards. Put people in jail for doing drugs and then we let out burglars. Yeah, I know. It's crazy. But on the financial side, to stay on track. Trump's messing with us here in California, and I'm loving it. I'm telling you, it will produce some amount of results. Now, since Trump is such a divider, here is him addressing the Latino Coalition Legislative Summit in Washington, D.C., and just listen to how warmly he was received.
Thank you, Hector. I'm thrilled to be here with so many of our incredible leaders in the Latino business community, and you folks are good business people. I know that. I know that for a fact. I've had to compete against you for a long time. In fact, I said, I want to get out of that. I want to be president. It's easier. But I especially want to thank all of you, the Latino business leaders, who are living proof that the American dream is back and stronger than ever. The Latino community embodies the pioneering spirit of America. We're a nation that loves adventure, that celebrates risk-taking, and that embraces faith and family as the true center of American life. As president, I am committed to unleashing the full potential of the Latino community by removing government burdens, by restoring safety and security to our neighborhoods, and by defending America's interests so that all of our citizens can prosper.
The Democrats are busy engaging in identity politics, while Trump is putting forward policies that affect everyone, white, black, Latino, whatever. Everyone benefits from less regulation, from lower taxes, from more jobs and less regulation. And the rising tide that will follow, absolutely without question, bring everybody up and will show what. I mean, this is what leadership is about. It's phenomenal. Good stuff. And not a hater, not a divider, like Jerry Brown says. All right, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back right after this.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program
whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation. All right. When I said earlier that the press is just doesn't even know what to do with Trump's success with North Korea, getting North Korea to the table to agree to talks, let me give you a little flavor of this. This is CNN's Camerata talking with New York Times reporter David Sanger. They're actually giving Trump credit. Listen to this exchange.
David, in terms of giving President Trump the credit, don't you need to rewind the tape back farther than the Olympics? I mean, he, during his campaign, during the transition, he was already saying things that were unorthodox. He was already saying that he would sit down and negotiate. So didn't that sort of set the table for the South and the North to then have this Olympic moment?
That did. And one other thing did, Allison, which was that the imposition of truly deep sanctions, which the U.S. stepped out to enforce, I think probably gave an additional motivation to Kim Jong-un to go realize that he had to get into some talks that would relieve that pressure. And I think President Trump deserves enormous credit for ratcheting up that pressure and making sure that the sanctions were real. There was no reason that the Obama administration couldn't have done that, and they didn't.
Yes! Holy smokeballs! You have a New York Times admitting that Trump has done things well, that he has deserves credit for the results that are before us, and even unbelievably an admission that the Obama administration could have done all of this but didn't. David, I'm gonna give you a little clue as to why the Obama administration never did this. Mom jeans. Oh, yeah. Barack, Mom Jeans, Obama. This is... You saw this guy riding a bike? Did you see the picture of Obama in Martha's Vineyard with that goofy, stupid-looking helmet, saggy-baggy jeans, silly T-shirt, riding a bicycle? He looked like a eunuch. You think that Kim Jong-un is going to take that bozo seriously with the, you know, with Hillary Rodham Clinton, as Secretary of State? Yeah, we're going to get you. Well, we're going to, yeah, did you check the mail yet? We sent a reset button. Did you get the reset? I mean, this is the stuff that we're dealing with. Nobody took them seriously. They're clowns. And this is the first time I have heard anyone at the New York Times, or in basically establishment media anywhere, give this type of credit, of praise to Trump, combined with the criticism of Obama. Now, Chris Cuomo did all he could to try to poo-poo all of this. And here is him on his program talking to Allison Camerata. This was back on Wednesday before even the meeting spread. Already you had the timepiece and you had a number of publications out. Listen to him poo-pooing this.
There is the question of whether or not this is happening because of Trump's unorthodox, chaotic, or any of the other benign words we use to describe what seems to be unexplainable in his behavior sometimes. Or it happened, Chris, despite it.
Right.
That with his provocations, the State Department has been working hard on this. Tillerson has been trying to use diplomacy. They've been trying to shield themselves from exposure to Trump's rhetoric a lot. So maybe this happened despite it.
But it's
maybe
still the administration. I mean, right.
He still gets the credit. And that's, but it is a little bit of a window into how hard is he making it on his own people to get this kind of progress.
Right.
Lols. Oh, it happened despite of it. It's really Rex Tillerson. That's who gets credit. where do you think we're going to be poll numbers wise in a week? Look for a bump. Friends, look for a bump. It's going to happen. And by the way, this is defying the narrative. This is why Chris Cuomo is in Struggle City to address it. This is defying the narrative that was supposed to be there, the crash and burn of the 2018 midterms. And here we are in March. 2018 midterms in November. I mean, primaries ramping up. They're around the corner, and Trump is soaring like an eagle. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem, and Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live. I'm not live. Why do I say this always? Well, we're here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Not live, but very much alive. How about that? Oh, I am having so much fun. By the way, this was a blip earlier in the week. Sam Nunberg. This guy, you know who he is? He's the guy who, for about 24 hours, supernovaed all over the cable news. He was subpoenaed by Mueller. He had worked in the Trump campaign. He was fired back in August of 2015. By the way, do you know how long ago that was? That was when Trump, there were still however many primary challengers. The field was wide open. Trump was polling at 1 or 2%. This is when I made my big bet that Trump would win the presidency. My famous bet came was very the last weekend, Labor Day weekend, 2015. I mean, the idea that Trump would win was a long shot. Okay, so this guy, Sam Nunberg, gets subpoenaed by Mueller. And he's like, I'm not going to show up. I'm going to defy. Come arrest me. It was sort of he had a kind of a come at me, bro, moment. And everybody seized on it. And we're just like, oh, this is so great. This is so great. Can I make an observation? This guy's a nobody. This guy was, I mean, some of these people that are being subpoenaed were important in the campaign. But this guy is literally a low-level flunky at a time when the campaign was mostly, if not largely and completely, irrelevant. And he got fired. The only reason he is doing this is because, for a political operative, I don't actually know what he does, but I'm assuming he's not super gainfully employed. He might still be living in his mama's basement. So we, with that assumption, okay, a lot of these political types, if they fall out of one campaign, they don't hold on to a campaign. I mean, a presidential campaign only comes along once every 4 years. You fall out of that early, you're kind of out of work. So what is he doing? He's drawing attention to himself. He's making a lot of noise. He's getting lots, or he did for about, like I said, for about 24 hours, getting a lot of airtime, screen time on TV. And he's hoping something comes of it. I think he just looked like an idiot. But I also think the real losers in this are the media that are giving him a platform. And they're so desperate. They're so desperate. Oh, my gosh. This collusion. Trump-Russia. They just want to make it happen so bad that they have to... They give an idiot like this so much of their time. This guy's disturbed. I don't know if you caught any of it, but there you're handing a microphone over to a totally disturbed individual, and they didn't corroborate anything of what he said. It's funny, and this is what the media is doing. Now, I'm telling you, if Mueller, this is important, if Mueller is subpoenaing this guy, we're getting to the bottom of the barrel, aren't we? Okay, let's say you're a smart investigator looking into the Trump administration. Okay, so tell me, what is it that you're, where do you start? I think you start with the number, you know, you did the top guys, right? You start with Corey Lewandowski. You start with, you got to get Bannon in there. Now, maybe you first talk to the low-level people to get an idea before you talk to the big targets, but talking to this guy who's out for basically a year and 2 months before the election even happened? No. No. This is desperation. You're squeezing a guy like Nunberg. Where are you going with this? So Mueller's probing this secret meeting in the Seychelles. He's going after Nunberg. And all of this, the media is just going after it like a pig chasing truffles. But don't forget this. A pig may find a truffle once in a while, but a pig literally will eat anything. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Yeah, just to give you an idea here about how crazy the left-wing media went for Nunberg, the low-level Trump operative that is defying Mueller's subpoena. CNN gave number, and this is between 3:30 p.m. and 11 p.m. Eastern on March the 5th. They gave Nunberg 3 hours and 50 minutes. And everything else that was going on that day, they gave that 1 hour and 23 minutes. For MSNBC, it was roughly a similar 3 hours and 16 minutes to Nunberg and then 2 hours and 30 minutes for the remaining news. And this, by the way, 3:30 to 11 p.m. is your key, primetime news lineup. What a joke. All right. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. Speaking of the military, so in North Korea, they have trouble feeding their soldiers, but it's a conscripted army. I don't know if you know this. There's mandatory service in the army, and I think they conscript you for potentially a very long time, like something like 8 years. Think about that. But don't worry. I mean, it's not like you're going to have a real career in North Korea, anything you have to get around to doing. So you serve in the military, and most of it is basically you're forced to build railroads and roads and work in rock quarries and factories and that kind of thing. But here in the U.S., we also have a problem. We can feed our soldiers, but we can't find enough of them, at least not enough of them that are qualified. Here's a Marine Corps commandant, General Robert B. Neller, talking about the qualifications of men and women out there who are potential to serve in the military.
I think we're all aware that, in the nation, I mean, it's a strategic issue that less than 30% of the young men and women of our nation are qualified just to join the military, either because of physical, mental, or moral issues. So now we're down to 30%, and now we have to find those that have a propensity or are interested in doing this. And as there is some growth in the force, we're all out there competing in the same, looking for the same type of young men or women.
I think he meant to say we're all out there competing in the same labor pool. And by the way, I don't know if, granted the military also requires some physical fitness that not every job out there requires. But I would say, for the most part, the military is looking for the same people any good business owner is looking for. If you're a business and you're hiring, you want somebody who's honest. You want somebody who, is relatively smart. You want somebody who can perform at a certain level. And this guy's estimate, this is horrifying. This is horrifying. If you are a parent of children and they're still young enough to be impressionable, make it your life's purpose to have them be in this 30% and not in the 70% of total losers that can't even cut it in the military. And I know some people, and Robbie, I am not talking about you, but I know some people who have been, for example, in the Army. I mean, if that's part of the 30%, I'm horrified to know what the 70% look like. So we got to get real. And this idea of coddling our youth and mollifying them with safe spaces and all this BS, this is the problem. You want to celebrate International Women's Day? I'll tell you what, man up, because we all got to get tough, regardless of what gender we are. All right, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, what fun this has been. Isn't this been great? I can't believe it. 2 hours gone like that. Be back next Saturday. Looking forward to it already. Have a wonderful weekend and a great week ahead. Over and out.